Welcome, everybody, to the Tomahawk Show, presented by Uninterrupted. I am NFD, the host for today, kind of, along with Joe Thomas.
I'm your humble co-host, and I wish you fans at home could see the giant smile on NFD's nameless, faceless body, because he is so happy to be sitting in the hosting chair right now that I'm a little worried if Andrew doesn't come back anytime soon, he might never be able to pry NFD's body out of that chair.
So for those who missed last week's episode, make sure you go back, watch it, rate 5 stars. You'll hear that Hawk is on vacation. He's on spring break in Florida. Joe was on spring break last week in Wisconsin. I was still here in Ohio. But we all returned to work and to film, and Mr. Hawkins decided not to for some reason.
Yeah, you know, Hawk, he's always been the guy that you can't really rely on. You know, he's the guy that's always taking the two-hour lunch breaks. He goes outside for the quick smoke break, and it turns out to be a two-hour lunch where he's drinking martinis with the boys. So he's always been a little bit hard to get a hold of, but hopefully we can get him back in studio next week.
He is your prototypical diva wide receiver. That's the best way to describe
him. That's the best way. I mean, you got to have him. You can't play without him, but you just can't always love him because they don't always show up.
On this week's show, we talk to Cam Jordan from the New Orleans Saints, Pro Bowler. Joe Thomas talks about throwing out the first pitch with the Cleveland Indians a couple years ago. And we talk about Joe's many auditions for Thursday Night Football and Monday Night Football and how those went.
And don't forget, we also get NFD's take on his opening day experience this year from the Cleveland Indians. Without any further ado, let's get right into it.
Joe, we all know you're on vacation last week in Wisconsin. How'd that go?
It was not the vacation that I'd hoped. Certainly, we planned for an amazing Easter vacation. We'd go to Minnesota to see my in-laws, and then we're going to drive down and see my parents and my sister for a little while. And, well, the kids proceeded to get sick with the flu for like 5 days of the most epic puking and pooping flu of all time in world history, including by day five, we had to take my middle daughter to the ER.
Oh, wow.
Her blood sugar was so low, she like had a hard time staying awake. So she needed to get sugar. She needed to get IV fluids. And after she got that, and they gave her something called Zofran, which is like an anti-nausea drug. After she got that, she started feeling better. And then thankfully, after those 5 days, the kids started feeling better. But then, of course, right at the end of the trip, I got sick with the flu. Thankfully, it was only, you know, 24 or 36 hours. It wasn't too bad, but it still wasn't fun. I hadn't had the flu for a long time. So what had plans to be an amazing spring break trip, seeing the family, enjoying some good time with some friends, turned out to be just a week in the infirmary of hell.
Now, I put a Twitter poll up on who people would want to go on spring break with. The options were Joe in Wisconsin, Hawk in Florida, or NFD in Ohio. We had about 8,000 votes come through. 800,000.
800,000, yeah, right.
And Joe actually won with 56%. Now, I wonder how many of those people would want to go back and change their vote after hearing how great your spring break trip was.
Yeah, I'm sure after hearing that story, they're probably going to ask to re-vote because clearly you didn't want to be with me. It was a nightmare, but I'm happy to be back in Ohio. It's been a busy few weeks, but being in studio with you, Danny Boy, NFD, filming another great show of the Tomahawk Show feels good.
And just so everybody knows, I ended up with 13% of those 800,000 votes, which was a little bit better than actually I thought. People like Ohio.
People like Ohio and they like NFD. He seems to be a guy that you could drink a beer with, you know, you could be a politician. You know, that's always the standard.
I like the beer part. I don't know if I like the politician part.
But that's always the standard for a politician these days. It's like, well, I feel like I could drink a beer with that guy. I'd definitely vote for him. So, Danny Boy, you got my vote for president, I guess.
I'm kind of more of a shot taker anyway.
You are. But not just one. You go with two at a time. That was really impressive. We had NFD at the Super Bowl when we were doing our world-famous Super Bowl shows, and we took NFD to the bars, and we thought we were going to show him a few things. Of course, Hawk was in bed. He was crying. He's not a guy that can make it past 10 o'clock
at
night. That
was weird that he didn't come out.
He didn't come out. What I think it really was is he told us he was going to bed, and then he was going to go hang out with people that were cooler than us, going to real parties besides the Barstool Sports one that turned out to be a huge flop. But anyways, yeah, so we're taking NFD to the local watering hole thinking that we can show him how to drink a beer. And all of a sudden he's ordering like 3-4 shots at a time. And I'm thinking one's for me, one's for him. No, they're all for him. So he turned out to be an animal. And that's probably why we didn't see him for night two. He was in bed pretty early for night two.
Yeah, a little early.
But, well, hey, what you been up to this past week?
Well, my spring break, my highlight was I went to the Indians opening day.
Oh, how was that?
Good. I've done that for about the last 13, 14 years in a row.
Really?
Take my nameless, faceless wife, nameless, faceless brothers, and some other friends and family. We meet up, go downtown, went to the game. A little chilly, but it was good. The Indians won. Are you a big baseball fan, Joe?
I wouldn't say I'm a big baseball fan. I love watching the Indians when I have time. I love cheering for the Indians. Being in Cleveland for now 12 years, I've become a passionate Indians fan, although I've never been a passionate baseball guy. So I guess you could call me like the fair weather fan that I'll start watching in the summer when I have a little bit more time. And then once the playoffs are getting closer, I'll tune in a little bit more and go to some of those games. But I'm definitely a casual fan, but I like the Indians.
Can you tell us a story about the time you threw out the first pitch for the Indians? Did you do it one time or more than once?
I've only thrown it out once. Okay. They said once was enough. They said, thanks, but no thanks. You can keep the ball, but just don't come back. So it was my rookie year. I think it was like in May. It was, you know, shortly after the draft, and they invited Brady Quinn and myself, both the first round picks that year, to go throw out the first pitch, which I was ecstatic about. They made us jerseys, I think had our names on the back, and we got to go out there and both of us threw out the first pitch. And I'll never forget when we were in the dugout, the pitching coach was talking to us and he said, now, if you've never thrown from off a mound, aim higher than you usually would, because most people throw it right into the dirt because you're thrown up off this mound. You're not used to it. And you don't want to be that guy that embarrassingly one hops it or two hops it to the catcher. So
how your legend of Cleveland could have been so much different.
Yeah, that would have been bad. So I'm thinking to myself, man, I really better throw this hard, obviously, because you don't want to be a wimp and throw it, you know, 40 miles an hour, but you also don't want to throw it in the dirt. So I'm like, okay, he said, aim high. So I'm going to aim high. I'm going to aim like right over the catcher's head. That should put it right down the pike, right? So I get out there, and I think Brady threw the first one. Of course, he's a quarterback. He probably was an All-American baseball player in high school, and he throws this beautiful strike, and all the women in the crowd go wild. Oh, Brady, he's amazing, and he's so good-looking. And so I'm ready to step up there, and I'm like, okay, a lot of pressure's on me now because Brady threw a nice one. And I get up there, and I'm thinking, all right, aim high, but throw it hard. So I threw it as hard as I possibly could, and I aimed high. But it turns out that I aimed a little too high because the catcher was sitting there in his little catcher stance, and it went so high that he didn't even try to catch it. He didn't even, like, put his arm straight up in the air to try to catch the ball. He just sat there and watched it sail over his head, like 10 feet over his head, into the backstop behind him. And then he came out and shook my hand, and everyone was kind of laughing about it. But the key is to aim high, but not that high, I guess.
Now, that would be a dream of mine. We need to call up the Indians and have the Tomahawk Show all throughout the first pitch.
I think that's great. We need to have a Tomahawk Day at the stadium.
Ooh.
You'd think they'd let us have a couple of those guys come on the show and maybe let us throw out the first pitch?
I don't see why not.
Yeah, I don't see why not. Well, let's put it on the calendar. We'll book it and tell them what day we're going to show up.
But what's interesting to me is you guys didn't throw the pitch at the same time. So it actually sounds like you didn't throw out the first pitch. You threw out the second pitch.
Yeah, that's true. The interesting thing about the first pitch thing is it's real ceremonial and there's not a first pitch anymore. It's not like you throw out the pitch, give the ball to the pitcher, and then the game starts. This was like a half hour before the game, and there was a line of people. I mean, it was special, but it wasn't like we were the only ones out there. I want to say there was probably five or six people that all threw out the first pitch. So basically,
can you remember who else was out there with
you? No, I don't even remember.
Who ranked with the Browns first round picks of 2007?
Yeah, it was, somebody in the Browns maintenance department, I think, and, Berea Municipal Department. I forget who it was, it was still a really cool experience, and I'd love to be able to do that again. And there's actually one other thing that I would like to do. I'd like to take batting practice once with the Indians. I think that'd be kind of fun. That's something that you see like Russell Wilson, J.J. Watt, some of these other high-profile guys, not that I'm high-profile.
The real stars.
The real stars of the NFL. They get to go take batting practice with their baseball team, and I think that'd be kind of fun. I think it'd be fun to get out there. And so maybe when we do the Tomahawk Show out there, we can do batting practice and throw out the first pitch.
I'm down. Sign me up.
The problem is, though, now we're going to have to, like, practice.
Not throw it over the catcher's head.
Throws and swings, because I haven't swung a baseball bat since high school.
Sounds like you'd be just as good at that as you were throwing the first pitch. Yeah.
A lot of swings and misses, it sounds like, in my future.
But you had some other you weren't just at Wisconsin. You also had another trip recently.
So it's been a busy 2 weeks. Like, when we put it on the calendar way back towards January, we had big plans. This was going to be, you know, our big traveling couple weeks here to go see family, go home, and this was before I decided to retire. But then as the off season progressed and I started, doing auditions for different broadcast media jobs. I went to ESPN, did the car wash out there, did NFL Live and some of those shows with them. And then went out to LA to audition with Fox Sports for a desk job, but also their Thursday night caller analyst position. And then ESPN called because John Gruden, of course, took the head coaching job with the Oakland Raiders. So they're trying to fill his position now. And so I agreed to go and audition with them. And it was crazy trying to shoehorn that into my schedule just because the off season for NFL players is usually like booked up because that's like the only time of the year you have time to yourself where you can do things, see family, see friends, go on vacation, do whatever you want to do. So we always have that booked. So we had that whole thing booked before I decided to retire. And then all of a sudden I decided to retire. And so I've already got an off season book. Now I'm trying to book like basically two off seasons into one. So I'm taking all these auditions, all this travel, all these things going on in my life, and fit them into a schedule that's already pretty full. So got back from Wisconsin on Friday night and then had the flu Saturday. Sunday was able to fly to Bristol, feeling a little bit better on Monday. And then on Tuesday was my actual audition with Monday Night Football. Me, Joe Tessitore, who's going to be the play-by-play guy for Monday Night Football this year, and Jay Rothman, who's a producer, we all got together Monday night and, you know, kind of did some training on my part because I've got no training. I'm a complete rookie in this whole thing. I don't really know anything about it. I've never called a game. I haven't really thought about doing it ever in my career. So it was not something that's ever been on the radar. So it was great to spend some time with those guys to help them kind of teach me the business, the flow of things.
Yeah. Why don't you walk us through that a little bit? I mean, do you guys just sit at like a makeshift booth and watch a game on TV or so, how do you go through that?
So getting to the actual audition, like in addition to them sending me a binder that was like 4 inches thick of all like the notes and the things that you have to read through and know going into the game, you sit there and you have kind of mini production meetings with each other to try to at least talk about, all right, you know, the first, let's say 15 plays of the game on either side of the ball. It's just like a coach would go into the game with his openers, right? And for them, they're thinking, okay, everybody's just starting to tune into the game. So don't get too detailed or specific. Just kind of start welcoming people to the game. So they talked about kind of painting with broad brush strokes at the beginning of the game with your commentary rather than getting too detailed and specific. So these were all great things that I learned. But when you actually get down to the audition, I think our audition started at, you know, 10 or whatever. After you go around the building and you kind of meet everybody that's the decision makers for Monday Night Football, then 10 o'clock or so, we actually went to the booth, which is in Bristol. It's a studio that's got a big curtain behind you, but you've got a big, like, 50-inch flat screen in front of you, and then you got a couple other monitors around you that have different shots from the game, and then you got a mic and headset, and then for the most part, they try to recreate what it's like being in the booth as much as possible. So you're wearing the headset and you've got your producer in your ear and he's kind of giving you a preview of, okay, we got an ISO on the receiver coming up in the next play. So then you have to kind of think about, all right, now I got to think about saying something about what the receiver did on this play. So it was a great experience. I learned a lot. Very interesting, but, you know, clearly just being there, if I do want to get into broadcasting or anything, I've got a lot to learn about the business just because I don't really know anything yet, but I feel like I've made tremendous strides already just in the couple auditions that I've had and just the little bit of prep work that I've been able to get from the guys that I auditioned with.
Well, if you were to grade yourself on your audition,
yeah,
what would it be?
Well, if I could go higher than an A+, I would, but I can't, so I'm going to go with like a C.
So what teams did you watch?
So like, was it a game that you've seen before? It was a game that I did not see, but they told me in advance what game it was, which was different than the Fox audition. So when I auditioned for Thursday Night Football, they didn't tell me anything. Like, they didn't send me anything.
Went in cold.
It was totally cold. They didn't tell me what game it was going to be other than, hey, when you show up, you know, we'll pick you up from the airport, and when we pick you up, we'll give you the flip card, which is the card that has both teams on it and the rosters,
yeah.
Right? So, and I'm completely unprepared. I don't have an agent at this point. I still don't have a broadcast agent. So I didn't have anybody that was even prepping me. Yeah, right. I'm sure you know a lot about being a color commentator. But usually if you have a broadcast agent, you've got somebody who can coach you up, who can teach you the game a little bit, teach you what you should be looking for, what you should be talking about. So I went into the Thursday night thing knowing nothing at all. Like, I didn't know a thing. I thought, I just was like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to show up and just do my best and hope that they see that I'm coachable, right? So walking out of that one, I didn't even know what I didn't know, right?
Yeah.
So you walk out of it like, I don't even know if I did well or I did poorly because they're not going to tell me. And I don't even know what I'm supposed to be sounding like. And so we had dinner after the Thursday night audition in LA, and they asked me like, how do you think you did? And like, do you think this was a good representation of who you would be if we hired you to be the color person? And I said, honestly, I don't even know because I'm not even sure what I'm supposed to be talking about or supposed to be saying or how am I supposed to do this? Because I've literally had zero coaching or prep work at all. So it was great being able to do the Monday night one because they gave me the game. So I was able to go and watch the game. They gave me a binder of like their notes before the game. So I was able to read up on the storylines and the games. And then the it seemed to me that with the Monday night guys, they really wanted to help me prepare to put my best foot forward because they really wanted me to do well. I'm not going to say they want me to get the job, but you could tell that they were going to spend some time before I walked into that studio to try to make me feel comfortable so that I could do a good job and get the best version of myself.
I mean, that's just two different trains of thought. One, going at it cold just to see how you are,
yeah,
straight cold, and then get coached up. Or this way, yeah, it's more representative of how you'd be, you know, studying, yeah, knowing what you're exactly talking about before you go in.
No doubt. So it was two different trains of thoughts. I don't know which one is right or wrong, but it was just different. So I felt like the Monday night one, although it was rough because I'm still inexperienced, I felt better about being in there and being a bit more comfortable and allowing my personality to show a little bit because I wasn't as focused on the details of exactly what was happening in the game because I knew a little bit more about the teams. When you're going into a game and it's cold, you don't know anything about the teams. And when I was in LA doing the Thursday night game, it was Seattle and LA Rams. And they're in the NFC West. We play those guys once every 4 years. So these aren't even teams I'm really familiar with. You know, if I walked into a cold game and it was Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, I could, yeah, do that all day long because we play those guys twice a year and every year for the last 11 years. They've had the same head coaches for the most part running the same systems. That'd be easy, right? But I'm doing Seattle and LA. I don't know the first thing about these teams, and especially because LA is a new coach. So when we played the Rams a few years ago, they don't even have the same coaching staff. They don't have the same quarterback. But the only same person they have is Aaron Donald. This is obviously the guy that everybody knows. And so Seattle, I knew a little bit more just because we had played them a few years ago and it's the same staff for the most part. But anyways, that's a long rambling answer. But I felt better walking out of the Monday night game because it was Kansas City and Tennessee. It was the playoff wild card game,
okay,
from this year. I hadn't watched it live at the time because I was on vacation.
You as can usual.
Tease me about that.
As usual.
And we didn't have cable where I was in Mexico. But I was able to watch it this past weekend. So I did have an idea of kind of what happened. And it was a little bit easier being able to listen to the broadcast one time to sort of have an idea of what they were looking for more than just walking
in. So you watched the game a couple days before you did your audition for that game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I didn't want to have happen was me watch the game and come up with like a routine, like I was a stand-up comedian, and be able to just go in there and recite the routine. And I think their safeguard against somebody doing that was they wanted you to react to what you're play-by-play guy gave to you. So he would tee you up with stuff that maybe wasn't happening on the TV or that wasn't being replayed so that you still had that element of surprise and that, okay, you had to be able to kind of go off the cuff and go back and forth a little bit with your play-by-play guy.
So you weren't like, okay, on this play, I bet he's going to throw a
15-yard
right, hitch.
Right, exactly. And they weren't giving you the Tony Romo brownie points by guessing what the play was because obviously you knew what the play was. But that did make it a touch tricky because you knew what was going to happen, obviously, because you'd watched the game. So you didn't want to sit there and act like a know-it-all. But at the same time, you knew what happened, so it was hard to, like, talk because you knew what the answer was and you didn't – you had to kind of walk that fine line between knowing what happened already and acting like a good color person would add a little bit of color to the game for the people at home.
Now, did you have like your own catchphrase? Did you try out your catchphrases like the boom goes the dynamite? What's your catchphrase? Yeah.
I was thinking about boom goes the dynamite and I thought maybe that had been taken already. So I didn't use any catchphrases. I thought that maybe that would sound too canned You know, I thought, oh, maybe let's wait on this, right? So I only watched the game one time because I didn't want to watch it too many times to have everything kind of in my head. I wanted it to be as much of an audition as a practice for me. So I wanted to keep it as natural so that I could get better at this, because whether I get the Thursday night or the Monday night job or not, I want to get better at this. So maybe next year or the following year or whatever it is, maybe I would have an opportunity to have another one of these jobs down the line if I don't get any of these jobs. And I just want to get better at it. You know, whatever I do in this life after football, I want to be good at it. And I think that was one of the things that stressed me out going into these auditions, especially this latest one with Monday Night Football, was I want to be good at everything I do. And so going into something that I had no experience doing, there was a lot to learn and a lot I knew going in that I wasn't going to know and I wasn't going to be good at. And that's hard for me, a guy that's always been a perfectionist.
But you clearly signed off at the end with Joe Hawk yourself, right?
Yeah, that was the last thing I said. You know, as the Titans are winning the game on the last drive, I made sure to throw in a Joe Hawk yourself and a podcast plug.
On your way home from the airport, I heard you were mistaken for a professional
wrestler.
Yeah,
so that was funny. So the night before the audition, I didn't sleep but an hour. You know, just you got things going through your head. All the prep work you've been doing is popping up, and there's nerves, which is really strange because I always slept like a baby the night before a football game, though, because I felt really prepared. You know, okay. I never walked into an NFL game thinking I wasn't prepared, because I always had the coaching through the week. I always had my own study. Like, I knew what to do, what to expect, who I was going to play against. And even though I knew the game that I was going to be doing and how it ended, it's still such a new space for me that I knew there was going to be a lot of times where I didn't know what I was doing and I was going to have to wing it. And so that gives you an uneasy feeling. You know, it's like walking into a test when you know you didn't study, or you knew there was things on the test that you couldn't study for and you were going to be a little bit inexperienced on. So I didn't sleep much the night before. The audition, obviously it's stressful, but you want to, you know, let your personality out and try to be yourself as much as possible. So once it was over, there was like that sense of relief. And I get to the airport, but I got to the airport like 3 hours ahead of time, because that's just when they dropped me off. You know, they were sick of me. So they dumped me at the airport in Hartford, Connecticut.
I do know this about you though, Joe. If you ever see Joe on Twitter put out multiple tweets in a row, like several tweets in a row, he's at the airport.
I'm at the airport.
He's just sitting there wasting time. That's how he wastes his
time. Absolutely. Absolutely. Dan, you know me too well. That's for sure. So I'm sitting at the Hartford airport, and like an idiot, I'd forgotten my phone charger the whole weekend or the whole trip to Hartford. And so I'm at one of these like free charging stations because I'm too cheap to buy a phone charger at the little phone kiosk. So I'm sitting at like one of the public phone chargers. I'm sitting on the ground and I see these two kids like kind of like giving me the hide and go seek stare. And I look over at them. I'm like, what's going on, guys? Because like occasionally as a pro football player, kids will look at you and they're not quite sure if you play in the NFL or you played in the NFL. But they want to come up to you and say something. And I know it's like a little bit awkward for them. So usually if I notice that, I'll say something to them. Like, hey, what's going on, man? You want a picture or an autograph or whatever? And usually they're like, not really. No, thank you.
No, thanks.
I thought you were JJ Watt. You know, then I would have taken your autograph. But so I said that to these kids and the one guy goes, oh, I'm a huge fan. And I'm like, oh man, well, I appreciate that. And then he proceeded to say something about like, when's your next match for the WWE? I started laughing. I'm like, what? And I told him I'm not in the WWE. And he said something about, I'm a huge fan of Finn Adler, who I guess is a wrestler in
Balor.
Finn Balor, who's a WWE wrestler. I think he's from Ireland. I think he's an Irish wrestler. He's like 6 foot. 200 pounds.
So a spot on doppelganger for you.
He looks exactly like me. The only thing I could think of is maybe because I was sitting on the ground, they had no idea like how tall I was. And I don't know, maybe they saw my beard and my hair and they'd never seen a guy with a beard before. And so they just put the two and two together. But I had to unfortunately break those two kids' hearts and tell them I was not a WWE wrestler. I was a famous podcast host. And after I told them that, they walked away. And they didn't ask for an autograph or a photo. So I had to ruin some days.
I'm sure Finn Balor's never been more insulted in his life.
Well, so I was like, who is this guy? And I went on to my trusty Google phone and I typed in the name. And sure enough, the guy's got like over a million social media followers. He's like a big, huge star in the wrestling world.
So we should get him on the Tomahawk Show.
Well, that's what I said. We obviously have to have him and Gary Barnage on the Tomahawk Show because Gary Barnage is a passionate wrestling supporter.
He goes to WrestleMania
every year. He goes to WrestleMania. I think he sleeps with Ultimate Warrior stuffed animals in his bed. I mean, he's a monstrous fan. So maybe we can, if we can't get Finn Balor, maybe we can get Gary to pretend to be Finn Balor and come on the show.
Fun story about Gary. He was actually on one of those WWE spinoff TV shows. It was Total Divas, where it's all the female
wrestlers.
Was he
the diva?
No, but he went on a date with one of them. Oh. And it was on TV, and it was hilarious watching him go on a like scripted date. Yeah. He said the whole thing was like pretty much scripted. Like they told him what to say, what to do.
Which is good for Gary because he probably doesn't know what to say to a girl anyway. So, no, I remember that we were in a team meeting, and the fun thing about being in the NFL, one of the many fun things, and even in college, is the head coach is always trying to find ways to needle his players during those team meetings to keep everybody kind of into it and alive and awake. And I think it does build a level of
camaraderie.
Esprit de corps, camaraderie, when you're able to all be in a big group together and you're kind of busting balls and stuff. So Hugh, a couple years ago, found that video of Gary. I think it was Hugh. I think it was either Hugh or Patton. But anyways, they found that video of Gary on the date, and he looked so awkward and out of place. It was great. They played it in the big screen, and he just turned red and started sweating. It was just so funny. But the girl was really cute. I mean, he could have done worse for himself.
Good for Gary.
Yeah, good for Gary. Maybe we'll get Gary on the show, and we can ask him all these great wrestling questions.
Well, circling back to NFL news, some lineman news here. Richie Incognito. I'm not sure how well you know him, but he recently announced that he's going to be retiring. What do you think about that?
It's interesting. Obviously, I was sitting in the cafeteria in Berea this morning eating breakfast before my workout, and there was a ticker on the bottom line that said, Richie Incognito has said he is retiring, which made it – it was so funny to me because
I've never seen that before
because when a player announces they're retiring, usually the ticker says Richie Incognito has announced his retirement.
Yeah.
This one just said Richie Incognito is saying he's retiring because clearly they don't believe it.
We don't know for sure.
Yeah, they clearly don't believe it because there's a lot of speculation. Obviously, Richie has a little bit of a checkered past being involved with the bullying accusations and some issues he had after he was suspended from the league. And he's got a reputation to be a loose cannon a little bit throughout his career. So I think everyone is suspecting that the Bills asked him to take a pay cut, which he agreed to, and he's mad about it. And so this is his way of leveraging for more money or something like that, just saying he's going to retire. But he's fully committed, according to his Twitter page, that he's definitely retiring, and it's because of health reasons. And he made some points that I can definitely relate to. His point was he's retiring for health reasons. Apparently he did some blood work a few months ago and his enzymes for his kidneys and his liver, which is, I think, a marker of how hard they're working, were really elevated, right? And his point was the lifestyle of being an NFL offensive lineman, of eating the amount that you have to eat, specifically carbohydrates, proteins, to be able to keep the bulk on, to be a big offensive lineman, is really taxing on not only your joint from being that heavy, but your internal organs from processing all those carbohydrates and all those proteins on a daily basis and keeping your cells nice and big and fat to be able to go out and play at 360 or 340, whatever Richie plays at. And so I think he's, according to his Twitter page, is looking to just get into a little bit more healthy lifestyle. And I can definitely relate. That's one of the things that I'm excited about in retirement is losing weight, getting a little bit more healthy, eating more of a balanced diet that's a little bit less taxing on my internal organs and my joints, and just finding that right balance in life where you can eat and live long term and feel good about yourself and have that healthy lifestyle. Because once you get in your 30s, I think Richie's a year older than me, so he's maybe 34, 35.
So you've lost enough weight to where people think you are a professional wrestler who weighs 200 pounds.
Yeah, right. So I'm 270 right now. I'd like to get down to 250. And I'm feeling better. My joints are feeling better. I still have a hard time standing. That's my biggest complaint right now is more than a minute of standing because of the bone-on-bone spots in my knees and the bulging disc in my back and arthritis in my knees and the hips. When I stand, those bones just rest on each other, and I get a lot of bone pain, which is not fun. But it's funny because walking around, working out, those type of things doesn't seem to bother it too much. It's just the standing. It's really a wear and tear, and it's a drag. But hopefully that gets better as I lose more weight. But either way, Richie has said he's retiring. I believe him. I wish him the best. He's a guy I got to meet a few times at Pro Bowls. He's a very fun, interesting character. I think he would be really good if he got a podcast.
Or if we got him on.
We got him on our podcast. If he was a guy that would join Barstool Sports like Pat McAfee, I think he'd do great. So either way, Richie's got a bright future outside of football if he truly does decide to retire this offseason.
Well, he had a quote that I found interesting. He said that he wants and thinks he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that interesting because, I mean, he's a really good player. I mean, he's a multiple-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, I think he's made three or four Pro Bowls. He's had a nice career, especially for a while there. He was out of the league, and people didn't want to touch
great
him.
Great comeback story.
All of a sudden, he comes back. He kind of turns things around with
Buffalo.
With Buffalo, makes a bunch of Pro Bowls, and he's had a great career. But I think to make that bridge from great player, Pro Bowl player, to Hall of Famer, you kind of have to take things to the next level, and he thinks he's done enough to make the Hall of Fame. When you look at the guards in the NFL that are in the Hall of Fame and the guys that are kind of on the door waiting to get in, you look at guys like Alan Faneca and Steve Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Those are two guys that have been up for the Hall of Fame and have not gotten in, who've had twice as many Pro Bowls as Richie, have Super Bowl championships, and they have not gotten in. And so I think at this point, pending any more Pro Bowls or any more football for Richie, it's going to be tough for him to get into the NFL Hall of Fame. I don't think he's done enough yet, but I could be wrong. I mean, it's not him versus guards. It's when you're going in the Hall of Fame, it's you versus
every guard,
all NFL players and all guards of all time. And you got to be above a certain standard for those Hall of Fame voters to say you deserve to be put into the class of the greatest of all time in the game. So we'll see.
All right, now let's switch gears here. Joe had a chance to catch up with Cameron Jordan earlier today. Let's check that out.
I'm very excited to have the Saints All-Pro defensive end Cam Jordan with us. Thank you for being on the show today, Cam.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
All right, let's get right into this. I know one of the questions I always ask NFL players when I see them in the offseason is, what have you been up to? Because I always tell people one of the best parts about the NFL is the offseason. It's unlike college, you know, where you have to go right back into it in January. If you're in the NFL, you get from the end of your season until just about mid-April where you can kind of do whatever you want, whether that's training, go back to school, go on vacations, whatever it is. But I always found a lot of fun time to go on vacation to kind of better myself. Mr. Jordan, what have you been up to this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, a normal offseason involves, you know, traveling and just trying to broaden my horizon in terms of, you know, countries I've seen and the places that I've gone. This offseason, I try to keep to that track. I went out to the Bahamas, went to the birthplace of the Bahamas, went out to Eleuthera, Cone Familia, and, you know, really just enjoyed a week there before I had to take care of some in-season pain. You know, I had a quick little snip, and I would say snip, but it was more like a shave. I had a quick little bone spur taken off, and really just been rehabbing since. So as you know, you know, any minor injury can disrupt the whole off season. So I've been stuck here. Well, actually, I was in New Orleans, and then I finally got to go ahead to go home to rehab here. So been here for almost a week.
So where's home for you?
Good old Chandler, you put out some talent. The same me, Deion Jordan, Patrick Sweden, Fred Henley. I could probably ramble off a couple more. I mean, Trust, probably not claim Chandler High, but, you know, he started his career there. So he claimed him more than he claimed us.
Arizona, a lot of guys seem to like spending time in Arizona in the offseason. L.A., Miami, those seem to be like the three most popular places. But one thing I wanted to ask you about was some of your travel. I know one of my good friends is Alex Mack. He was, I believe, a former teammate of yours in Cal. He's another guy that's got the travel bug, and he's been to some amazing places in the offseason. I'm kind of like a junior traveler. I've got three kids, so I don't get as many traveling opportunities as I used to, but I had a privilege of doing a USO tour, going to Afghanistan and Qatar, Switzerland, Italy, been to some cool places. What's your favorite off-season trip that you've had so far?
Yeah, I mean, you know, similarly, I did the USO tour last year. I got to go to, you know, Bahrain and the UAE. And honestly, it's, you know, I had never even heard of Bahrain until I got there and realized, you know, what our military presence meant. Just being in the Middle East as well as, you know, just being able to walk around and sort of get a feel for the culture, you know, being so much different from ours. But some of my favorite places have been, you know, Brazil, over to Argentina. You know, I'm a kid from Arizona, so I'm always in Mexico, you know, whether that be Cabo or, you know, Ensenada or whatever it is, Mexico City even, like, just being able to get out and see things I've never seen before. You know, I could say Western Europe, but almost everybody goes there. I like to be able to dive in deeper, you know. I've been to Jyväskylä, Finland. I've been to Helsinki, Finland. At some point, I'd like to say I've seen the whole world, but, you know, one day, hopefully I'll get there. But I'm sort of on your path, you know, multiple kids. My traveling days are slowing down.
You got to get it in now before they start getting any older.
Right.
So you went to Argentina and Finland. I got to say, that I've heard there's a lot of cool things to do there. What did you do when you were in Argentina?
That was in my super younger days. I was like my rookie year in the league. You know, I'm not going to lie, I feel like I have to go back to actually enjoy. You know, when you're 21, 22, what was I, 22 at the time? I was trying to drink my way through Argentina.
They got good wine. That's what I hear.
For sure. You know, that was my first introduction to Malbec. But I was drinking, you know, I took Catarinis from Brazil and just kept on the train, you know, trying to tequila my way through. And as much as I remember Brazil, I'm like, Argentina was somewhere I could have stopped off and actually enjoyed my time. So, you know, one day, hopefully, I'll take my other half there.
Were you in Buenos Aires or were you out in the country when you were in Argentina?
Of course I was.
Okay.
Of course I was. When you think Argentina, you're like, what country can I? Just like Brazil, we were just in Rio. Like, that was going to be. Now I'm on the road. If I hate a main city, I was also going to stay long enough to hit like some suburban areas, some, you know, some places that maybe not everybody talks about. Like, you know, me and my brother went off to Tokyo, but we also hit Kyoto, we also hit Mount Fuji, we also hit Kobe and like another different spot. Just to say, hey, we actually have been to Japan. And as you get older, you understand that it's not just about, you know, going to a place, but it's about exploring and getting lost into the culture.
Did you climb Mount Fuji? I went to Tokyo like 5 or 6 years ago. And they said if you wanted to climb it, you got to start at like 5 in the morning and it takes you all day. And you got to make sure you got the appropriate amount of water or you're just going to not make it.
Oh, no way. No.
You looked at Mount Fuji. You didn't climb it.
Yeah, for sure. I observed Mount Fuji.
Yeah. You had Mount Fuji Japanese restaurant for dinner. Well, interesting. That's great. I'd love to travel, man. I'd love to get to some of those places. It sounds like a lot of fun. Do you follow any interesting workout routines in the off season? I know that Aaron Donald has gotten a lot of acclaim here in the last few weeks because he gives all of his friends these knives and then he just lets them attack him all day. And that's supposedly how he's become such a great defensive lineman. And I was wondering if you do anything similar or if you had any interesting off season routines you could share with us.
Yeah, you know, I like to say that, you know, my daughter comes at me with her spoons from breakfast. That's when I was my hand swipes. Definitely nothing as extreme as, you know, even the videos where, you know, whether the blades be, you know, sharp or not, the velocity in which they're coming at them is alarming. No, none of that. But we talk about, you know, the ability to be a D lineman, you sort of have to live what you do. You know, I'm always playing around with my older brother, like wrestling, and, you know, we're always playing hand games with each other, just in terms of D-line progression. But yeah, nothing that crazy, nothing that absurd.
I always thought it was really funny because you see these guys in the off season, you know, like Aaron with his knives and everything, and you know, it's a classic NFL thing. He's got like a buddy who's a trainer who's like, hey, why don't we try, you know, I'm going to stab you and then you try to knock my hands away and this will make you better. And you start doing it for a while and you're like, yeah, whatever. But you're such a great player like Aaron Donald is that he's got all these guys watching him and they're all thinking, wow, that's the secret to being a great player. Like as if his talent and his work ethic and like football things had nothing to do with it. It was this ridiculous knife drill that he put on Twitter one time.
Right. I was going to say, what about the two guys behind him that didn't get that acclaim?
Yeah, that's right.
There's other guys in line going next.
Yeah.
What about those guys? Give them a shout out too.
That's right. They actually died. RIP. They didn't make it. Their hands weren't quick enough. Well, hey, let's talk football a little bit. I know you guys had a new quarterback, or he's not new, I guess, but he signed a new contract this offseason. You've only played for one quarterback in your entire career. Obviously, that is Drew Brees. There was a tiny bit of speculation, being that he's a free agent, that they waited so long to extend him that there was potentially a chance that he was going to go somewhere else. There was some rumors that maybe Minnesota had offered him a contract, but was there ever any concern from your end that Drew was not going to end up in a Saints uniform next year?
No, I mean when two sides are showing loyalty to each other, I'm not saying it's a rarity, but normally a team doesn't give you that clarity of, hey, we want this guy back. You know, they say, hey, if the car is flowing right, but when you know the Saints come out and say, hey, we're doing everything in our power to get this deal done, so we're really not worried about it. And Drew says, hey, we're doing everything in my power to get this deal done, so I'm not worried about it. It gives, you know, the players ease of mind of knowing who your quarterback is going to be. You know, when both of them want to get the job done, I've got no reason to believe it otherwise, especially after, you know, the great career stint that he had in New Orleans.
So Kirk Cousins became the highest paid quarterback in NFL history this offseason. He's a guy, in my opinion, that's sort of, if you went 1 through 32 with all the starting quarterbacks in the NFL, he'd probably be ranked somewhere 16, 17. So he's firmly a median quarterback in the NFL, but he's paid like the top guy because of timing. We all know about that. But Drew Brees took less than he could have got on the free market to go back to New Orleans because of the history he's got there and obviously his love for the city and vice versa. But does the team show a guy like that love when he comes back and he's willing to take less money to be able to stay in the same situation? Or are you guys like, dude, you make so much more money than us anyway. You should be giving us the love.
Joe, you answer that one for yourself. Yeah, you've been around the league. You understand the quarterback is going to do good things for the team. You understand everything, you know, that he took a pay cut. He's also making 2 times more than the next highest paid player. you know, we're excited to have Drew back. You know, we know exactly what he's bringing to the table. And, you know, for anybody who says their age is slowing them down, I pointed last season and then I put that as proof as otherwise. You can only hope that, you know, not only does he recreate the magic that he displayed last year, but we as a defense rise to the challenge of, you know, stopping any offenses from trying to change our plans we have for ourselves.
Speaking of offenses in your division, you've got a pretty fun, interesting rivalry with Cam Newton. Another one of these great quarterbacks in the NFL. And I'm just curious, being that I didn't ever played in the NFC South and we only played a couple times in my career, how did that rivalry start with you and Cam?
You know, it's really not a rivalry. He's a you know, $100 million quarterback. and, you know, I don't know if he even pays attention to anything I do. I try to pass him, you know, a couple quarterback hits, a couple sacks, a couple hurries. But that's what I try to do to every quarterback. When you talk about just how freakishly athletic Cam Newton is, it's probably more of a deep respect than anything. You know, and honestly, we both know, or we all know in the NFL that, you know, if Cam does get hit, he does look for, you know, a little rough call. The same thing, you know, if LeBron gets a foul, he's looking for a little rough help as well, you know? Mm-hmm. Or if he doesn't get a foul. At some point, you know, quarterbacks will look for refs to help him out, you know, especially if they get, you know, beamed from the backside. I feel like it's my job to try and frustrate a quarterback, and I sometimes go out of my way to do so.
You're a fun guy. Obviously, you have a lot of fun when you're on the field on Sundays. Do you try to play into that rivalry a little bit with a little WWE magic? And does Cam give it back to you at all? Are you able to get him off his game at all? Like, when you're on that field with him, do you ever look him in the eye and you say, all right, I know I'm in your head right now. I know he's thinking about me instead of the coverage on this play.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that way. But I don't know. I don't know if I rattle him. I mean, we've hit him, and we've hit him a lot, you know, definitely this last year. And as much as, you know, I've, like, you know, I love to hit Cam. I love to see him, like, flail around, you know, roll around and get stuff, and then he just starts doing the extras. Mm-hmm. At the same time, this year was probably the most calm and in control that I've seen him. And it was, you know, it's almost unnerving after you lay a major hit on him and he just pops right back up. The greatest thing about this season is, you know, we really didn't let him into the end zone, so he didn't get the whole unleashing the Superman situation and the, you know, putting a marker forward and, you know, everything that he can do to, you know, hype up his team. We've sort of eliminated all of that, the extras anyway. So when you get down to it, we did everything in our power to come away with not one, but two, but three wins that you normally would never see happen.
I've got a lot of respect for Drew Brees, Cam Newton. I think those guys would be in my top five quarterbacks in the NFL. If you had to name your top five quarterbacks in the NFL, what would it sound like?
If I don't put Drew number one,
he's not letting you back in the locker room. So we'll just pencil that in as number one here.
Yeah. So Drew, you know, it'd probably be like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Cam Newton.
One more.
And Roethlisberger, possibly.
Okay, then Roethlisberger. All right, that's pretty solid.
He'd be T5, you know. T5. It'd be like Ben Roethlisberger. And I sort of hate to play Case Keenum now.
Oh.
But I can't, you know.
Okay,
He's my dark horse because he came from nowhere.
Sure, okay. Now, top five current offensive linemen in the NFL, guys that you know it's going to be a long day when you're going to play against them. Not because they're nasty or they finish, but they're just good players, and you know it's going to be tough to beat them.
You retired, so there's really...
Yeah, so that's why I said current. I'm just a has-been.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really worry about speed bumps like that.
I like
you guys,
it.
You guys seemingly get in my way, but, you know, there's maybe two, you know, with Tyron Smith and Trent, you know. Other than that, I really... care less.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I love it.
You know, would hope that you guys get out of my way from doing my job.
we'll do our best. Top five pass rushers. Now this is interesting to me because obviously that could be D tackles, outside linebackers. We'll put you number one here. I've penciled it in already. So who are your next four best pass rushers that you like?
Yeah. Guys, you try and look at it. And, you know, I would say Emile, but I don't even try. Von Miller, Khalil Mack. We talk about, you know, their ability to explode off the line, their ability to, when I say speed of power, I think they're just at a different level of speed than I'm at, you know.
Well, you're a bigger guy.
I mean,
you got more power.
Yeah, I mean, you know, their first three steps is just, you know, overly impressive. Meaning if you talk about interior, you go Geno and Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm.
If you go sleeper, Calais Campbell to round up my top five.
Beautiful.
And I'm probably disrespecting Chandler Jones and Yannick.
Okay.
Right.
Beautiful.
And then don't let me forget that I'm sure JJ will be back sometime in the near future.
Absolutely. So your last NFL game obviously was the heartbreaker in Minnesota. Your dad's old team. How long did it take you to get over that loss?
I don't know if I'm ever going to get over that loss. Mm-hmm. You know, I still talk about, you know, losing to San Francisco in 2011. So these are just, you know, these are things that we, that I'll sort of harp on, and I won't let it, you know, sink me, but at the same time, it'll be a motivation for next year. Cause, I mean, I've looked at the play almost 80 times, you know, 200 times, you know, maybe 1,000 times. But without harping too much on it, it was more along the lines of what could have I done differently. I mean, had I not gone for S classes, could I have sort of recreated throwing, you know, the Detroit tackle into a quarterback instead of you know, allowing Chase to step up in the pocket and release the ball. Before I can put on anybody, I always try to see exactly what I could have done, how I can better myself. Mm-hmm. But we'll see this upcoming year, that's motivated me.
Absolutely. So your dad actually was a, I think, 6-time Pro Bowler for the Vikings. Is that correct?
Correct. You know, the Jordan men have 9 Pro Bowls.
And does he ever give you any shit that he has more Pro Bowls than you do?
No, because, you know, my career is not done. I tell him it's a work in progress anyway. It's 6 Pro Bowls. You should have just don't bring it up. Mm-hmm. I don't win the Super Bowl, so, you know, maybe I can start screaming this Canton worthy ideals I have with him. So we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. I'm going on a campaign soon.
Okay. So obviously your dad, one of the 50 greatest Vikings of all time, is what he was named. Do you remember, did he ever tell you any stories about playing in the NFL back then? Or do you have any memories from when you were a kid and he was either just playing or recently retired that you think would be really interesting?
I mean, I was like 4 when he retired. So, you know, my memories are along the lines of, you know, being in a stadium and it being an open stadium and it was snowing. I was cold and miserable and whining. You know,
like most kids,
the best of memories in terms of, yeah, I mean, I was at the point, I was like, what do you remember? That and like running around the locker rooms and jumping on guys. And then, of course, being retold the stories of, you know, jumping on the likes of Chris Dolman or who was it at the day? Yeah, Chris Dolman or Keith Millard, Joey Browner, you know, Darren Nelson, Leo Lewis. It was just a multitude of guys that, you're like, oh, they had some hype back in the day, you know? And you sort of go from those stories, and like, you know, my dad did a phenomenal job of not making it about himself. In fact, he moved from Minnesota to Arizona, like, you know, when I was like 6 or 7. And really, it was more along the lines of, you know, my dad, who had a regular job like everybody else, who's an engineer. That's not even a job like everybody else, you know? The guy who graduated from Brown and made his own path in this world. We sort of took that for granted because he doesn't really talk about football much until we started playing football. And then, of course, stories started.
Does he ever give you the old, like, NFL reminiscent, like, back in my day we had 4 days and we practiced for 12 hours and you guys are soft, you're sissies these days. You guys don't even hit each other in practice anymore.
Yeah, probably exactly that when I started complaining about how it was my first camp. Dad, it's 100 degrees, the humidity is killing me. He's like, dude, you're doing 2 days for you is hitting in the morning and walking through in the afternoon. That, you know, we used to do one in the morning, one after lunch, and if we called it a walkthrough, you know, we still had full pads on. I was like, okay, I get it. I get it. You had to walk 5 miles to practice. I get it.
Nice. All right. Last couple questions, then we'll let you go. New Orleans is known for its food. You seem like a guy that likes to be adventurous. What is your favorite food to eat when you're in New Orleans?
Yikes. Char oysters, and there's a couple good spots for that. There's like one place that I go to religiously that I don't even know the name of it. I just always end up going. South of St. Charles, I just know how to get. It's one of those spots where I know how to get there. I couldn't tell you exactly. Like, hey, Cam, how can I get there? You got to follow me. You take a right at Mr. John and a left at the Smoothie King and go down right before you hit this ice cream spot. That's exactly where it is. And you go, oh, that tells me nothing. But it's a lot to me.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed it. Cam Jordan, all pro from the New Orleans Saints. Thanks for being on the Tomahawk Show.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. God bless.
All right, well, it's time to switch gears. It's time for the Tomahawk Q&A session. You can tweet us your questions on Twitter using hashtag Tomahawk or go to our Reddit page. It's the Tomahawk Show. Joe's got a couple questions here. Let's hear.
So the first question that I think is kind of funny is from Derek M. Mast on Twitter. He says, hey, at Hawk, I heard you're in BG. If you need swiped into the dining hall, let me know. Hashtag Tomahawk. So apparently there is a small troll that looks a lot like Andrew Hawkins running around the Bowling Green campus.
Wow.
That can't get into the dining hall. So if you're that person, call Derek Mask on Twitter. I guess you don't call him on Twitter. You would direct message them on Twitter, and he'll swipe you into the dining hall on his dollar. Apparently.
Just pretend to be Hawk, and you'll get a free meal out of it.
Apparently, Hawk's getting free meals at Bowling Green. So I thought that was kind of funny. NFD, do people ever mistake you for a doppelganger or somebody else, you know, walking around town now that you're a famous podcaster?
There's not a whole lot of people without faces. So I don't really get a whole lot of, hey, you look like this guy, because I don't really have a face. So I don't get mistaken for, you know, professional wrestlers.
That's a great point. So our next question is from Leo Lesher on Twitter, at Leo Lesher. He says, Tomahawk, NFD, Hawk, at Joe Thomas 73. Sources say the NFL are going to stop using the color rush uniforms, even though you didn't wear them in a game. What was your opinion on them? Hashtag Tomahawk. So I have always hated the color rush uniforms.
Really?
Every time I turn those Thursday games on and the color rush are on, I'm cussing at my TV because I just hate them. I'm such a traditionalist when it comes to jerseys. I like seeing the traditional jerseys. And that's part of the reason I hate when college football teams do these crazy jerseys. I just want to be able to turn the TV on and recognize who I'm watching, to be able to cheer for Ohio State or Michigan or Wisconsin or Oregon, whoever it is. I want to be able to recognize the team I'm cheering for. And that's the same thing in the NFL. I don't want to see all white versus all yellow. I don't want to see all purple versus all brown. These are ugly. They're confusing. They're difficult to tell between the teams. And I think it's good that the NFL is moving away from color rush. Yes, I'm sure Nike's mad because they want to sell more jerseys and, you know, promote their ridiculous jersey combinations that they do in college and in the NFL. But I think it's good because the NFL is a traditional league that prides itself on traditional helmets and jerseys, and I think they need to stick to that.
I just think you're an old fuddy-duddy.
That is true. So you are correct on
that. If the Browns came out in all orange, that would be awesome.
What? You would like all orange?
It would
you
look
like
awesome.
The pumpkin look?
Once every couple years, it would look awesome. No. Not like every week, because then it would get boring.
Yeah, I think you're wrong, but we digress.
Got some questions here from our Reddit page. This one was specifically for you, Joe. Has the newfound fame gone to your head?
It's for me.
Yeah, the newfound fame from the Tomahawk Show.
Fame. It has gone to my
Because obviously you didn't get any fame from playing an NFL player.
Right. As an NFL player, I was largely anonymous, which was tremendous. But now that I'm a big podcast host, number one on iTunes, number one on just about every platform we're on, it's difficult to walk around. I tell you what, people are telling me all the time how great the show is and how much they enjoy it and how it gets them to and from work every day. And a lot of people even sneak it in during work. You know, I think I've seen a stat Wall Street Journal came out with last week. They were talking about productivity in cities where the Tomahawk Show is on, and it's fallen 20%, believe it or not, since the Tomahawk Show has started to air back in January. And they're blaming a little bit of this last stock market crash on the Tomahawk Show because people aren't looking at that work anymore. They're too busy waiting to hear what NFD thinks about the color rush uniforms.
All orange. I got another one here from Reddit. Joe, what is your favorite cheese? I mean, you're a Wisconsin guy. You got a lot of cheeses.
The question that's made me the happiest out of any Tomahawk question so far this year. My favorite cheese without fail is Swiss. It's like a very sharp Swiss cheese. Not the baby Swiss, but like the Swiss with the really big holes. I really like Swiss. That's my all-time favorite. But if you get into the more boutique-y cheeses, I like really hard cheeses that are almost crumbly, like the really old aged cheese. I'm kind of a cheese snob, so
I can tell by how excited you're getting right now.
I love cheese. I really do. Helps bind me up. It's really a nice part of my diet program. What about you, NFD?
I was just going to say Swiss.
And yeah, Swiss is great.
Just basic Swiss, because I like simple things, and you're over here talking about cheese that's falling apart in your hand and melts in your mouth.
Yeah, it's really good. I love my cheeses. The only cheese that I'm not a huge fan of is blue cheese. And I think blue cheese is like a real divisive type cheese, you know. It's almost like the Johnny Manziel of cheeses, really. You know, blue cheese, you either love it or hate it. There's not a lot of people that are kind of in the middle on blue cheese, just like Johnny. You either love them or you hate them.
But when blue cheese came on the Tomahawk Show, a lot of people changed their opinion about it.
You think so?
Yeah.
So all you people out there that might have people thinking you suck or you're awesome, come on the Tomahawk Show and then everyone's going to think you're awesome.
I got one last here from our Reddit page. What book is currently on your nightstand? Are you a reader, Joe?
I used to like to read before bed. I was more of a magazine guy. I would read like Field and Stream and Outdoor Life and stuff like that. And then I kind of got into history, Middle East type books. After I went to Afghanistan, I was really interested in how different like that part of the world was and their culture and the wars that have been going on and that part of Central Asia forever and ever. So I read a ton of books about that that were really fascinating. But then we started having kids, and so now my my nights are spent rocking and cleaning up dirty diapers and puke.
Sounds like a great night.
Yeah, a lot of fun. All right, I got one for you. So when I was looking through my Twitter at my airport gate, like I usually do, somebody sent a picture of Finn Balor at the airport from earlier in the week, and it was like his back. It was like he was at ticketing, and it was the picture of his back. In your opinion, NFD, is it—
No, you don't look anything like him.
No, that's not my question. Is it okay for a fan to take a picture of the back, secretly of the back of one of their favorite players? Or let's just say they notice a celebrity's there, so they're just going to like snap gorilla photos of their back.
I say absolutely.
Yeah.
I think from your point of view, I would like to hear your opinion on this actually. Is that— that you making it seem like that's a negative thing? Like he's just—
No, I just wanted your opinion.
He's secretly taking a picture of you, it seems like, or not you, but whoever.
Yeah.
You might not like that, but I think my point of view, if I was in your shoes, I think that's actually better than them coming up, bothering you, you know, while you're, I mean, doing something, whatever. Maybe you're out to dinner, you know, interrupting your dinner and saying, hey, can I get a photo with you of your face? So they just take one of your back instead.
Yeah. No, I got no problem with it. I mean, I think as people that are in the public spotlight, like NFD and Finn Balor are, not myself at all, but I think when you go out in the public, you expect a certain level of people, I don't want to say bothering you, but getting excited about having you around, and they're going to want your autograph and your picture. And sometimes they don't have the courage to ask for your photo, and they're just going to take those through the bushes shots of your back. As a guy that's— it's happened to before, it is a little bit awkward when you notice it, because you're like, it almost feels like a Peeping Tom situation. You're like, well, you're taking random pictures of me, like when I don't didn't notice it. Obviously I notice it now, but now it's even more awkward because I'm looking at you and you're just randomly snapping photos of me. But I guess that's part of being in a famous podcaster like yourself.
I'm going to admit something here. I have been once asked for my autograph. And I
have
asked,
you really?
Should
no
I sign
way.
It my real name or NFD?
What did you sign it?
I signed it NFD. That's what they wanted. They had a football, and really? they have Hawk on it already, and they got me, and they said they're going to try to track you down.
That's awesome. Well, here's a question for you to follow up there. Have you ever taken a gorilla photo of somebody? Like, been really excited, whether it been— I know you're a big Indians fan or a Cavs fan, or maybe a celebrity that you saw.
I don't think so. I think when you're a big celebrity like me, like, you know, we're rubbing shoulders with people at these Super Bowl parties, and they're coming up and asking for pictures of me.
Right. You know, the guy that came to the top of my head right off the bat was Kevin Costner. You know, he was in Berea for a number of months a couple years ago when they were doing the Draft Day movie. I think you— NFD may have even been in the Draft Day movie.
There may be an appearance.
There may have been an appearance. And I was wondering if him and Jen Garner, those guys are two superstars in Hollywood, if you guys ever took photos of them when they didn't know it, or do they have a lot of handlers that make sure that none of that stuff happens?
They actually were great with when we were filming. They took pictures with people that wanted
it. Oh, really?
I mean, I'm not a big picture autograph guy. So yeah. I mean, it was cool to be there on the set and interact. Mm. I mean, it's just a whole different world, you know, like it was just cool to experience that. Yeah.
So they're— the moral of this story, the whole episode today on podcast with the Tomahawk Show, is Jen Garner and Kevin Costner are way nicer people than Andrew Hawkins, because they take photos with their fans, unlike that jerk, Andrew Hawkins, who never takes photos with his fans. All right. We're just wrapping up today's show on the Tomahawk Show. And we've got one final question, because we were actually talking about, before the show started, what do we call our legion of loyal fans? What should be the appropriate nomenclature? So I threw it out there on Twitter. I said, you know, we're recording our show today, and we needed to have a one term that describes the loyal Tomahawk base. And so I asked people on Twitter, and we're going to have to vote on it, but let's have a quick conversation here on it. And the first few comments are the Joe Hawks, or the Nameless Faceless Fans.
Ooh, I kind of like that one.
NFFs. The Tomahawkies, No Faced Fans, Tomahawkers, 89ers, 73 plus 16 equals 89ers.
Oh, you got to explain. Anjovies. I mean, that's good, but if you don't explain it.
The Anjovies, the Tomahawkies, Joe Hawkers, Choppers. A lot of ones on my Twitter page.
None of them really roll off the tongue very easily, though. Like the Joe Hawkians. I mean, it sounds good in theory, but it's tough to say.
I think what we need to do is compile maybe the top four and then put it to a Twitter poll like we always like to do.
The Joe Hawkers?
Whatever it is, I think it's going to be great, and that's what we're going to call our fan base. So anyways, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Tomahawk Show. I am your humble co-host, Joe Thomas. With me today was my fill-in co-host, NFD, because Andrew Hawkins was a wall for part of today's show. And thanks again to Cam Jordan for calling in. We had a great conversation earlier in the show. I know he was stuck in that tunnel over in the bottom of Argentina in a basement somewhere in the middle of a tornado, but we really appreciate you going to all efforts to be able to get onto the Tomahawk Show. And until further notice,
let's go straight to you, Mr. Hawkins. Joe Hawk yourself.